Hello, Pisces and Pisces Rising. Welcome to Cosmophilia, your 2015 annual reading from Planet Waves, from me. It is good to be here with you. Pisces recording being the second one that I'm doing in this series. I work through the zodiac backwards, starting at Aries, for the idea of treading the wheel in the direction of the soul's journey. This is a little bit out of Alice A. Bailey, Esoteric Astrology. Is it true? I don't know, but it always seems like an interesting way to do the annual edition. It's pretty much the only edition I do with this consciously working backwards, and it is helpful in that I am natal sun Pisces and have lots going on in Pisces, and so to do the second sign is something I'm a bit more familiar with. Is helpful. We're starting this year. I'm starting all of the readings with a review, something I've never done before. It seemed really to be called for and practical, given how much is changing and how much is happening and how fast it is happening. And this is especially true for Pisces in that there is much activity involving the outer planets in your sign, what were once called the gods of change. And there has been a lot of activity involving outer planets in your sign for quite a while, owing to planets just passing through the late signs in the zodiac over, you know, the past 15 years or so, when that's really influenced you quite a bit and given you the feeling that very large forces are at work within you, mainly within you, though depending on the setup of other angles of your chart, very large forces at work in the world around you. That too is true, but the way that this situates for Pisces Sun, Pisces Rising, as I'm doing these charts, is to think of this as an internal phenomenon more than anything. There's this thing in astrology called the 12th house. It's one of the more controversial houses in the chart. It's not easy to understand, and it's not easy to relate to in a way that is particularly lending itself of normal waking consciousness. The 12th house is what I would call the B channel of the mind. It's what's going on right below the frontal lobe. The 12th house is accessed through a number of different ways, including cinema, photography, smoking pot, meditation, sex, dreaming, daydreaming, active conscious fantasy. Those are all the positive ways. And then it also serves as what the Brits call the dustbin of the zodiac, where it is kind of like the delta of Venus, where everything just sort of flows in to this massive river delta in the zodiac. And it is as if consciousness maybe is a little boat floating on this delta, but without actually having contact with the water except under special circumstances. The thing is that a lot of those special circumstances have been active in your life for a very long time, in particular through two extended transits that have come through your 12th house. That's Aquarius by sign, by the way, looking at your chart starting from Pisces. I know you may have a different rising sign if you're a Pisces sun, but we're still going to stick with this Pisces as the first house thing, which tends to work quite well. And then you can listen to your rising sign separately. So the two things that have, well, three really, that have passed through the 12th house, this concealed zone, this zone that's out of the realm of the reach of normal consciousness. It's like a room next to the room that you're in, where you can hear things going on, where you're affected by things going on. And when you go to sleep in your normal room, your unconscious can then come through, and this is why it is the realm of dreams. And when you wake up, that reality is like a separate reality. It's like a world apart. And all the things I listed off that are part of this phenomenon of the 12th house all have that property. whether it's a movie that ends, and then that reality seems to end, but you take a little piece of the feeling with you, some memories. A sexual experience can have that, where often the best sexual experiences really do seem like they're happening in a world removed from the world. And then when they end, it's as if you dreamed the whole thing. Numerous other, you know, ways of accessing that. Meditation is a way of accessing that. The use of certain, well, this is a perhaps a value judgment, but psychoactive substances get you there more easily. Ayahuasca is an example of a 12th house experience. And then there are normal waking, uninstigated examples of 12th house experience, like deja vu is one of them. Like the feeling of remembering a dream that you had is a kind of an echo or recall of a 12th house experience, and it's an experience of a parallel world, in a sense. And I'm saying all this because your 12th house has been extremely active for the past 15 years. It is what has brought you into the present moment, that present moment being a good few outer planets existing in your sign, that's to say your first house. And to get there, they've all had to pass through the 12th house. And so there has been this exploration that you have been on, whether or not you've known it or not, whether you've been dragged in unwillingly or gone in with the valor and curiosity of a psychonaut, an aeronaut, an explorer of consciousness and of the different possibilities of reality, whatever that word really means. And you've become accustomed to existence in this parallel reality, and it has influenced the way that you see the world now. And what has happened is that over the past few years, in particular, there have been other, you know, other episodes, but there's been a very concentrated episode, say going back since around 2010, where one by one outer planets have entered your sign. Two you may be familiar with, Neptune and Chiron, both after making long journeys. In the case of Neptune, a very long journey across Aquarius that begins sometime around 2000, maybe, where it's just, you know, a really long trip for a planet and a state of mind, that have, you know, taken you through these inner depths of who you are. And as these planets have come into your first house, as they've entered Pisces, what you have experienced is one by one these things kind of emerging out of this deep unconscious realm and making themselves known one by one in a fully sentient way. Now, given that your chart is so influenced by Pisces, which is the sign that's often associated with all things of a 12th house nature, it seems to be like the natural home of the 12th house, or at least Pisces is a metaphor that we use just generally to describe the 12th house, no matter what sign happens to be there. Some of the effect is still holding. For you, the door is open more than it is for most people. That door to the other side, that reach into the unconscious, that reach into the cosmic realm, and seeing, perceiving, thinking of, experiencing that alternate reality, that cosmic realm, as if it were something real. Pretty much an inescapable fact for those born under the sign Pisces. Whether it's something that you embrace, for example, as a mystic or as a photographer or filmmaker or musician, all ways into the 12th house, or something that you struggle with because of perhaps atheist tendencies, very unlikely for a Pisces, just giving an example. But let's say, you know, you have a kind of a strict materialist atheist viewpoint and all these things are leaking through from this other dimension of reality that you're not really sure if that's a fantasy or not. But hey, fantasy is pretty fancy, right? It's pretty interesting. It's something that can evoke a whole world. And if you have a little bit of discipline, you know, you can turn it into Dune or Lord of the Rings, for example. So fantasy is powerful and it's creative, and you have some pretty viable access to that all the time as someone with Pisces so strong in your chart. And I think on some level all Pisces know that, and they also are aware that the real challenge is a pragmatic approach to this. How do you balance this deep immersion in the other side, basically, Pisces being the source material for all of this profound creativity that goes on in the world? How do you balance that with living practically, functionally, pragmatically in the daily world? That is a big theme of your charts this year. But it is not more influential than these changes that are happening to you. Changes initiated by, for example, the presence of Chiron in your sign, which began around 2010 and which ends around, phases out 2018 into 2019. Neptune in your sign, which took hold between 2010 and 2011. Very significant developments that are these environmental factors that have, in a sense, left you in a position with nothing to hide from yourself. Whether that's a happy thought for you or something that you struggle with, what you live with is a kind of very active potential for total transparency with yourself, the ability to have no secrets from yourself. This is a metaphor of things leaving this secret, deniable realm of the 12th house and one by one entering the first house, entering the realm of fully sentient consciousness if you choose to focus on them. And three planets have made their way in so far, and a fourth is making its way in as we speak. The three are Neptune, Chiron, and Borysici. They're all very active right now for a diversity of reasons, but what they are doing is allowing you a chance to make tangible those things about yourself which are typically not tangible. Pisces being one of the most intangible signs, the most intangible vibrations of energy that is completely off the wavelength of most people, unless, of course, they go see a movie and have it shot at them, or drink a lot of alcohol and suddenly realize, wow, this whole thing, this whole way that I normally use my mind, oh, that's only optional. I don't have to live like that all the time. I can have three martinis and then I'm this different person. Those are the typical ways to experience Pisces. You must live with this all the time. You have to be you 24 hours a day. And being you right now means having this full influence of, for example, the modern ruler of Pisces, Neptune, being in your sign till well into the next decade. At least, I would say this ends around 2026 or something like that. This is a long presence of Neptune in your sign, which is going to influence your life, which is influencing your life in the sense that it is making you more like yourself. The approach to existence that I think will work the best is to be more like who you know you really are. And you have had many experiences, many kind of journeys and manifestations of who you really are that have gone a long way to help you ground in that, be comfortable with that. And by comfortable, I mean knowing that you just simply must be who you are. There's just not a lot of wiggle room around that, whoever that may be. And that is what is happening with increasing intensity right now. Now, both Neptune and Chiron, the two best known actors involved in this, are planets that have a strong question of belonging, a strong question of involvement, questions of visibility. I'll give you examples of that. Neptune tends to be that element which we describe as invisible. Where Neptune is acting, it is possible for the whole thing to be under a kind of a cloak. And this gives you the ability, by the way, to work incognito, the ability to use your invisibility if you need to use it. It also can create a kind of feeling of isolation. Neptune has a very odd property of an isolation that's almost like being the boy in the plastic bubble. And this is something that must be worked with and worked through consciously, because if that sense of isolation happens, depending on the setup of your chart, to be particularly strong, it really can influence you. It also, you know, influence you in terms of like potentially feeling frustrated and even giving up on making contact. And it's almost as if you know that the contact with others that you can imagine is not quite the contact that is available in the world. There's kind of an idealism around Neptune, in much the same way that those Neptunian things like art and music and cinema create a kind of idealistic world. There is an idealism around Neptune that knows how good things can be, that knows the possibility of what it can be real to you, and yet at the same time it can seem inaccessible. And in terms of belonging, in terms of harmonizing, it's very important that you master the presence of Neptune in your chart. And this means looking at the ways in which you relate to people and seeking contact through the channels of Neptune, not merely through what you would consider normal social contact. And the channels of Neptune might include reaching people through any realm that involves the imagination. So therefore, you might not necessarily meet people, you know, on the street. I'm not saying you won't, but if you're looking to make contact, that contact might best come through, say, for example, some artistic or musical work that you are doing, where you have brought people inside this kind of psychic enclosure that you have and have allowed them into the space that you are in, rather than trying to necessarily meet them over in their space or in some neutral space. Neptune is saying that you are, in a sense, a dimension of your own, and that you'll feel the most fulfilling contact when others are able to meet you within that dimension. And one of the ways to do that is to use these Neptunian modes, the healthy, creative, constructive Neptunian modes of engaging others, for example, in artistic and musical collaboration of some kind. By the way, no matter how casual, no matter how quote-unquote non-professional, this is not about how, you know, amazing the work is. This is about the process of experiencing yourself through some form of creation and collaboration. But further, with Neptune, there is really that element where isolation is very helpful, where to be able to enter this alternate reality, it is necessary that you kind of cut yourself off from other people for long enough to be able to do the work internally. You know, for example, I mean, I'm sitting here recording, and in order to give you my undivided attention, I have turned off all communication devices in my environment. Phone is unplugged. Cell phone is in airplane mode. My chat programs and Facebook and my browser are all closed. And I have asked everyone to not bother me. So I'm creating a kind of an isolation bubble wherein I can work and do this very special process of delivering information to you intimately without interference coming through. I've got your chart in my hand, and my collaborator, Jonah Kelly Francis, the mini Dachshund, is comfortably cozied out on the couch. And so basically it's you and me and my familiar, and we're just chilling out here. And that is a bit of accessing the use of Neptune as the bubble. And it's very difficult in the world the way that it is set up to enter this bubble. Many people live with housemates. It's difficult to find time when one is actually alone and silent within one space. I think that to do any real inner growth work or artistic work or any high concentration activity, that it is necessary to be able to consciously create that bubble. And so I suggest that you look for the ways where you can do that, where you can give yourself some form of art studio existence, or some form of music studio existence, or some form of being able to write and relate to yourself in a way that does not involve the intrusion of others, whether psychically or telephonically or digitally in any way, and that you basically can define a space within which you can commune with your own process of creation. So again, there are two sides to the Neptune thing, and the whole story of Neptune and your sign being extraordinarily rich with potential, possibly even to the point of being a little bit overwhelming. But there's a couple of different keys to that, to the, wow, there's so much, it's so intangible quality of Neptune. First of all, Chiron has been in your sign for a while, and Chiron is at once the best friend of Neptune and the antithesis of Neptune. And it's the best friend of Neptune because it is the antithesis of Neptune, because it is the very opposite energy that has the effect of making Neptune available. For Chiron students, one thing about Chiron that is universally applicable and easily applicable is that Chiron is a kind of a transducing tool for any of the otherwise difficult to contact outer planet energies. This is especially true of Neptune. Chiron works like a focusing filter for what is otherwise this nebulous, difficult to grasp and describe quality of Neptune. Chiron has been in your sign for a while. I believe this goes back to around 2010. There might have been some warm-up in 2009, and so we really get a process that spans solidly between 2010 and 2019. And what Chiron is doing is, first of all, insisting that, giving you the opportunity that you focus your self-awareness. If you are doing reasonably well under this transit, it is about focusing your self-awareness, the ability, hopefully ever-increasing ability to do that. If you're struggling at this time in your life, there may be something that is as simple as a self-awareness issue, and simply by training your self-awareness, you may be able to bring yourself, guide your boat of consciousness to a more fulfilling and more a more productive space. The other thing about Chiron that is so interesting from the standpoint of harmony with the environment and with belonging is that one of the first things that anyone discovers looking into Chiron is that it is about standing out. Even Martha Lang Westcott, who treats Chiron as an asteroid, she's the astrologer who does the whole Treehouse Mountain asteroid project, she does not regard Chiron as an outer planet. She treats it as an asteroid. And in the delineation of Chiron, the asteroid, it is about being different. There's a standout quality to Chiron. And there's numerous metaphors for this running through the whole delineation of Chiron that's emerged over the past few decades since it was discovered in 1977. But the astronomer who discovered Chiron, Charles Kowal, one of the first things he said publicly about it is, this thing is a maverick. It does things differently. Maverick being the rancher who refused to brand his cattle because it was inhumane. So the concept of a maverick came to mean a person who does things their own way for their own reason. And that is thing one about Chiron. It has many other functions in that regard, including you know, there can be this sense of, oh my God, I am so different. I will never fit in when Chiron is very active in your chart, whether it's natally or whether it is through some kind of a transit like you're having now. And there's a good few people in the chart who are, by the way, born in the 1960s, and everyone born in the 1960s is somewhere along or very close to their experience of having their Chiron return. Great many people have Chiron in Pisces. It was kind of there from, estimating like around like 1960 to 1968, and so anyone born in that age range is in the process of having their Chiron return, where this whole theme can really flourish and be confronted for like that time that really makes it productive and useful. But for anyone of any age with Chiron in their sign, there is going to be this question of, I stand out, I am so different, what do I do to be able to relate to people in a closer way? And the first thing to do is to realize that you do stand out and that you are distinctive, and to make peace with that, and to recognize that no matter how distinctive you may have been before Chiron entered Pisces, this is especially focusing of the theme of distinction, the theme of difference, the theme of the maverick. And this puts you in what you might think of as a special social situation, and also in a special leadership situation. The meeting ground of those is there is no way, really, to just sort of like blend in and kind of be nobody. You are on mission. And that is the awesome gift of Chiron in Pisces for you, is that it is reminding you that you are on mission. And everything else going on in Pisces, presence of Neptune and two more planets I'm about to describe, is illustrative of the support that you have being on this special quest, this special mission. And you might think of that mission as the quest to be yourself at full strength in the world right now, as a matter not of concept, not of fantasy, not of desire, but of tangible experience with being distinctive and with doing that thing that only you can do, the thing that is your calling, to actually be free enough to do. And you know something about what that is. Now, while we're on the theme of Chiron, let's talk about the series of conjunctions that Chiron is in the process of making to a really amazing outer planet. By outer planet, I mean that it's orbiting our sun. All the points I talk about, with just two exceptions, are points that orbit our sun, except for the sun itself, of course. Well, the moon, that orbits the Earth. But that also orbits the sun. So I'm talking about points that are in our solar system. And Borys CC is in our solar system, just a shade out past where Pluto is. Pluto's got a 250-year orbit, and Borys CC is in the 300-year range, 300-year orbit range. So it's a slow mover. It's an outer planet. It really takes its time to go through a sign. It is in Pisces. It is taking its time to go through Pisces, and it is one of the highlights of your astrology right now. Borys CC is extremely complex. I'm going to link to an article in the written portion of this called With Love from Borys CC. Just writing that down so I remember to do it. And this was an article I wrote about the Pisces new moon conjunct Borys CC back in 2011, where this thing really emerged as an influential player and a reminder of the importance of being in harmony with the environment. And the importance also, as Chiron often emphasizes, the importance of taking early warning and really being real about the early warnings that you get. Both Chiron and Borys CC function as early warning systems. The only thing is that there's really nothing in the human experience that generates an automatic response to an early warning of any kind. So you're the one who has to listen and make a choice. But I think from a inner standpoint of the personal experience of Boris Cici, there is something here about how it is you go about determining what is true for you. That inner reality of the mediation of all of reality through this inner function of determining what is true, what is actually real, what information am I going to be sensitive to? What information am I going to take on board? What actually do I determine is valid? And so Chiron in this picture is the kind of, Chiron's asking this question all the time. And if there was ever a take no prisoners planet in terms of what is real, that would be Chiron. And we combine this with Boris Cici and we get a radical asking of this question of how it is that you personally assemble your reality, how you personally decide what truth to believe, what truth not to believe, what lies to believe and what lies not to believe, and then every other possible combination of those things. And so my sense is that all of this Abraham type material where your vibration determines your reality and what you choose to perceive determines what is true for you is going to become a very large piece of your personal growth, assuming it has not already done so. And so the ways in which your consciousness is able to create filters, whether the ways in which your emotional body is able to override your mental body, where you might feel something is true, but the rational facts speak differently, or you may see some rational facts pointing to a certain thing and your intuitive body or your instinctual kind of mode is saying, well, no, we have to question those facts or we're just simply not going to accept them. So to me, the theme of Chiron Boris Cici conjunct is the theme of reality being receptor mediated, reality being outside reality, seemingly outside reality, is a function of one's own mind and one's own senses, particularly the reality to which you are subject and which you voluntarily subject yourself. Now, in the process of making decisions, you can only choose between the options that you have, except that what is it that filters out your options? What is it that allows certain options to come through the filters? How does Bill Gates see the world? How did Steve Jobs see the world, right? How do the people who can see the much larger potentials for themselves and the world see the world? What is their process of that seeing? And Chiron Boris Cici is saying it is essential that you take over this process of filtration, of prejudice, of projection, and of synthesizing what is true for you in an active, tangible, conscious way that allows you to be a kind of master of yourself and a master of your reality. Which leads to the last planet that I'm going to talk about as being a direct influence within and on Pisces, conveniently themed planet Nessus. Nessus is a centaur planet. It orbits in the, it kind of shuffles between the inner and the outer solar system. It tends to bind up the themes of Saturn and Neptune into one theme. And so it is a lot about the formation of reality and the ways in which we can change formed reality. So if you think of Neptune as being the imaginal factor, and also the thing that dissolves, and Saturn being the tangible factor, and the thing that is the result of past actions, that is the result of past choices made. Well, other ways to look at Saturn, but that's a basic one. The interaction of these talks about the ways in which we can tangibly shape our reality. We can make that balancing point available between the solid world of Saturn and the imaginal world of Neptune. Now, Nessus does a lot more than that. And when you kind of cook down all the experiences of Nessus and reduce it down to its most, purely refined broth, we get a story of accountability with Nessus. Nessus shows up in all kinds of themes. One of the first discoveries astrologers made was Nessus showing up around the theme of things going wrong with sexuality, whatever that might be, whether it was STIs, whether it was abusive situations in some way. And this was merely a clue to the meaning of Nessus, by no means the end of the story. It was just a point of departure to what seems to be a theme of this point that is about accountability. And when we combine that with you, there is the need for full accountability of what you do with your life and what you do in your relationships. There is the invitation to be the place where, as Melanie Reinhart says about Nessus, where the buck stops. The buck, by the way, is not the dollar. The buck is a buckhorn used in the game of poker, and it is passed from player to player, and whoever has the buck is the person who deals the cards. So when one has the buck, when the buck stops with you, for example, you become the person who organizes the game and who deals the cards. So I know there's not well understood history of that phrase, the buck stops here. But when Nessus shows up in your sign, the buck stops with you, and it is impossible to pass the buck. You must be the person who deals the cards, who organizes the game. And this goes beautifully with these other transits in Pisces, because it is a focalizing of your ultimate responsibility to yourself. All right, so I'm going to take a little pause, and we'll move on to part two of this discussion, wherein I'm going to talk about all these other exciting transits that are happening in your life, like a series of Venus-Mars conjunctions. I'm going to also talk about the role of the Uranus-Pluto square in terms of where your somewhat radical values encounter the world around you and why there is actually a fantastic fit. And hey, I can do this whole reading based on that one aspect, Uranus square Pluto, and that encounter between you becoming increasingly radical and original and why the world is ready for that. But there's lots else to talk about, so we'll get to that in a digital instant. Thanks for listening, and I'll catch you soon.